Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to the program locally, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, nationally in Canada on Sportsnet and through the United States on the NHL Network. This is Hockey Central. Around the table, Jeff Merrick, Anthony Stewart, Justin Bourne, and pleased to be joined by, from NBC Sports, you watch him, covering hockey, former NHLer turned analyst extraordinaire, the one and only Patrick Sharp. How are you today, Patrick?
Thanks so much for stopping by. Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Let me ask you really quick. What is the best and worst thing about being an ex-hockey player? And can you still get out there and play?
Tough questions. I do not play on purpose. I skate every once in a while with my daughters. Get them out there on the ice, try to teach them how to bend the knees and push, but I purposely left the equipment at the rink, had to pick it up maybe a year later from the trainers. And
not because you were sick of it.
No, I love hockey, and I wish I could play, but I know if I get out there, I'm going to start thinking like, oh, you know what, my shot's still pretty good, my body feels good. You put me with DeBrincat and Kane, and I might be able to play on the power play still, so I'll wait to start playing maybe a couple years.
Now, did you get the fresh meat phone calls when you retired? Because where I live, and anytime anyone retires from the NHL, that's always the first phone call, come and join the men's team, come and join our beer league team, just trying to recruit. How many Sharpie, come join our team phone calls did you get?
And there was a few, yeah. Those are the fun ones, too. I would like to go join a beer league team. The Blackhawks have an alumni group that gets together and skates, so pretty soon I'll be out there with them.
I know. I know my dad hated that because there's always some guy in the beer league that wanted to make, you know, my dad having played in the NHL, so, you know, some hero that wants to say they took down the former pro. So I don't know. It sounds to actually have a name and then go play in beer league, someone, you'd be a target.
Yeah, and I'm not looking to get any more stitches. I played my whole career with my teeth. I don't want to lose any teeth.
That's impressive.
So hang on, so those are all, like, you never had one out?
No.
Stu, you?
No.
My front row's knocked out, courtesy of Danny Bois.
That's right, yeah, you told that story.
Oh, yeah.
Danny Bois got you?
Oh, yeah, he got me. Yeah. He told me he was going to do it, too.
No way.
Oh, he's like, Stu, you come near me again next shift, I'm going to take your teeth out. I'm like, yeah, right. And then my teeth are on the ice. He did it.
That's one of the more incredible stories I've ever heard.
You should have listened to him.
in his defense, he told you.
Sharpie, you won a bunch of cups with Chicago. Do you stay in contact with any of the old boys?
Yeah, we live in Chicago. Our families, that's our home base. I do some work with the team in a lot of different areas, do some broadcasting, but I've got a nice option there to kind of hang around the rink, see the guys now and again, go upstairs and talk with different people in the front office. So it was a pretty special time to play for the Hawks. I got in at the right time. What a run it was. And now that it's all over, it's the only difference is I'm not going on the ice and playing. I still feel like I'm a part of the family and still feel the losses. And don't get as excited about the wins. I just want to see the guys happy and having fun.
But what a time, though. Like, that Blackhawks, that really, like, that specific, as far as, like, there were so many of you guys who had, you know, career years. And, you know, I always look at Stanley Cup teams and I say, okay, who's at his peak? And there were a number of peak performers on that Chicago Blackhawks team. Like, that must have been a treat
to play with. It was like a perfect storm of so many different variables. You know, it was I know you guys talk about the Leafs occasionally on this
every
show.
Every now and then, kind of a local radio station.
And with that coaching change, it brings back memories to kind of the 2008-09 season with Chicago, where Dennis Savard was coaching our team. We had a lot of young players. Kane and Taves were getting going. Brent Seabrook, Duncan Keith were studs on the back end. We had all these nice pieces coming into place. And as soon as Joel Quenneville took that team over, it was like, okay, we got a veteran coach that knows how to lead us here. And we just went in the right direction, started winning games and playoff series. One Stanley Cup is enough for most players. I got to be a part of three different teams that won. We almost won a fourth in between the last two. So just an incredible run, and hopefully the Hawks can get back to that level.
You guys loved Savard, though, didn't you?
I loved him, yeah. Like, a lot of guys did.
Was it three games in, he got scotched?
Well, he picked up halfway through the previous year. Trent Yanni was the head coach, and they made a move. Dennis took over, and Savvy was great. He just loves the players so much that you should see. He was like the... You could tell if we won or lost based on his face the next morning, man.
He's just so uncoach-like.
Oh, man, he could not put it behind him and get a good night's sleep if we lost the game. So I learned a lot from Savvy. He put me on all three forward positions. He played me 25 minutes a night sometimes. It was huge for my career to play for Savvy.
One more question about that era of Blackhawk. Maybe you guys want to jump in on more on it, but I can recall when, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, if I'm a player, I'm saying to myself, okay, we see how this one's. So Joel Quenneville gets hired in the offseason as a scout.
Yeah. Right.
I was born at night, but I wasn't born last night. You guys must have seen the writing on the wall. Joel Quenneville's in as a scout.
Yeah, as probably
come
as much.
Come on here.
Probably as much as you did. There was a lot of pressure on the team back then. I mean, that's when we started seeing the first signs of pressure, really. Before that, Chicago wasn't back then as it is today. There wasn't 22,000 fans at the rink. The home games were even on television. Yeah. All of a sudden now we got a promising young team and there's some expectation there. So training camp with Joel Quenneville sitting in the stands watching as a pro scout, we kind of felt like we'd see him behind the bench shortly.
That's an interesting point, though, because it speaks to how like pressure is welcome. Like if you don't have pressure on your team's probably not very good and doesn't have much of a chance. So you almost kind of welcome the fact that, all right, the heat's on a little bit. So I wonder now, you have those relationships with all those guys and you're doing what we do now on the media side. How hard is it for you to walk that line? Because you probably know more than you can say, but you can imply a lot. Are you having a tough time trying to be media and knowing the guys as well as you do?
In the early stages, we need
a Patrick Sharp decoder ring when you're on. Okay, what's he really trying to say here?
I learned that from Quenneville, right? You play a bad game and Quenneville says, what'd you think of Sharp's game? He was ordinary. That means
just awful.
That means you had a bad game. I'm learning to kind of walk that fine line, but... And I like the guys in Chicago. I think they got a good young team. I still think there's a lot of hockey with those older players that have gone through the battles and won those three championships. Yeah. But it does get difficult after a tough loss to sit up there and try to gloss over some issues.
Sure. I remember talking to Glenn Healy when he was working with us at Hockey Night. And he worked between the benches. And I said, Glenn, what's the worst you ever heard between teams? Like, because he would hear all of it, you know, finger on the mute button, keep. And he said, not even close. 2010 Stanley Cup Final, Chicago and Philadelphia. He said it was relentless, as Patrick Sharp smiles. How nasty was it? Like, as far as chirps from the bench, chirps on the ice, like, what's the worst here? He goes, oh, without a doubt, Chicago was relentless on Philadelphia.
Yeah, we had a competitive team, is what I'll say. And I look back at some of those years, and I don't know so much about the Philly series, because that's an East-West matchup. I thought, like, 2009 Calgary series with Chicago. That was really our first playoff series. And then those Vancouver battles were something else. I mean, look at their team. They had Kessler, Burrows.
Oh, yeah.
Pierre was around. Bieksa was my guy that I went head-to-head with every time. And I'm sure there were some things said that both sides probably regret. But I'm so long ago now that I'm such a different person, I look back and I get that smile because we were all just so competitive and we wanted to win both sides. And that's what makes it fun to be a pro.
Would you want to be involved, you know, in hockey again in some capacity, whether it be coaching or scouting or anything like that?
Yeah, I think so. A big problem for me is two little girls at home, 8 years old and 6 years old. So to be a coach and to be back in it and living and dying with those wins and losses might be tough. I know it's time consuming. These coaches put in so many long hours. But, yeah, that's probably the one thing I miss the most is forget about putting the skates on and being in the locker room with the guys. That's great. Yeah. But you know, being in the fight and competing each and every night. You don't really quite get that as a broadcaster.
How much did you, when you played, because now as a broadcaster, you follow all of it. You know, you walk in like, oh, open book, guys, ask me whatever. You know, I follow all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Were you like that when you played? Like, were you the kind of person that like would watch, you go back to the hotel and you'd watch the West, like the California teams play and, oh, I got to check out the highlights. And were you that guy when you played?
Yeah, I was. I wasn't alone either in Chicago. We had a bunch of guys that followed the league. Patrick Kane knows everything about the National Hockey League. Brent Seabrook, Duncan Keith, and I would always get together on the road and have our hot stoves and talk about the state of the union of the Blackhawks and go around the league and talk about different trends we're seeing. I think it's important to have players like that that love the game, that want to be better.
Yeah.
I think that's a single reason why the Blackhawks were so good in that era was because we had so many guys that were looking to be better and want to be on top of things in the NHL. It pushes each other.
I've always maintained that... Not that I'm trying to wrap up his career because he's got a lot of hockey left, but I'm really curious to see what Jonathan Toews is like when he's done playing hockey. I think he's one of the more sneaky, interesting players in the game. Heard him on Aubrey's podcast a couple of years ago and gave you sort of a little tip of the iceberg of what goes on between the ears for Jonathan Toews. You've seen it as a teammate. We don't get a sense of it publicly because he's a very professional, he's a wonderful captain.
Captain Sirius.
Right, coach, he is, right? But I can't help but feeling that there is a lot more to Jonathan Toews than we just see on television or on the ice, true or false?
True. You can put Patrick Kane in that boat as well. And I got to watch what I say because they're watching the program right now. Guaranteed, they're sitting on the couch in the locker room with you guys on TV. So yeah, the Captain Serious thing was never really, I think it kind of got overblown. Just like Kaner's behavior was overblown as well. I think there's a common ground in between. I think Johnny likes to have fun. He's got a lot of different unique perspectives on different things.
Right.
And just like Kaner, he was always a guy that worked hard at the rink and wanted to be the best player that he could. I think the two reputations kind of blend together. I'm curious to see what Taser's going to do when it's all said and done. I don't know when that's going to be. He looks pretty good to me. I know you can pick apart numbers and throw stats out there, but I watch the games every night, and Johnny looks good. He's in good shape. He's moving well. I think he gets on a roll here pretty soon and starts filling the net.
So what was it for you that you decided to call it a career? Was it having the girls and seeing the family life and getting a taste for that, or was it on-ice factors that made you want to move on?
I think a little bit of both. It goes hand in hand. I kind of ran out of gas towards the end of my career. Some injuries, a lot of hockey. I think the Blackhawks played 120, 140 playoff games in a 5 or 6 year span. That takes a lot of years off your career. I just didn't wake up and think about hockey 24 hours a day like I did in my 20s. You know, I had a wife and two kids at home. I was bouncing around towards the end of my career, went to Dallas for a couple of years, back to Chicago. Mm-hmm. I just didn't get excited to go through the grind anymore. When I was 27, I loved it. All right, where are we going to dinner tonight, guys? What are we talking about? And all of a sudden, it's a chore to get on the plane.
You guys were winning in a good group in a good city. Like, right. I'm sure those were great years. It's tough to replicate that.
Yeah, it's tough. And now that it's all said and done and my body feels pretty good and I don't wake up sore anymore, I'm like, man, I'm only 37. Maybe I should give this thing another
shot. Well, you can understand how people leave the game and then, like, after a year, they're like, and I can see. Yeah, I understand. Like, just feeling good for once. Your brother did that.
And now with the Philadelphia Flyers.
I played World Juniors with Brent Seabrook, and our other teammate was Jeremy Colton.
Oh, yeah.
So is there any added pressure with Colton being a young guy, being, you know, younger than some of the players, him being a head coach in Chicago?
Yeah, it's a different dynamic, that's for sure. It's kind of old news now, but last year in Chicago when Jeremy took the team over, it was a little different seeing him behind the bench, such a young-looking guy, too. I know he's in his mid-30s, but he looks even younger than that, and the fact that he played with Siebes, and now he has to make difficult decisions regarding Siebes' career on a nightly basis, put him in good situations, keep him off the ice and others. That's a tricky situation, but he went into a tough situation, man. I know there's a coaching change here in Toronto, but how about Joel Quenneville leaving the team after three Stanley Cups, and now you're not just replacing a coach, you're replacing a guy that's a legend. So a tough situation to walk into, but I think I like what I see from Jeremy so far, and I think the best is yet to come.
Has that forced a bit of a different dynamic where Taves and Kane and those guys would have to almost take co-leadership with Colleton? Like, is he able to separate himself as a true figurehead, or is it sort of like a leadership by committee with Colleton? I just imagine it's a different dynamic than you'd commonly see in the NHL.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but I think Jeremy's the coach. He's the leader, and Johnny and Kaner and Dunks and Siebes, they abide by that, no question about it. It's got to be tough to walk in, and you got a core group there that's got gold medals and world championships and Stanley Cups.
Here's
and
what
all of a sudden,
you should do. You know,
we're
going to
long-term contracts.
We're going to change a few things and do it my way.
Yeah.
But slowly but surely, things are coming along, and I like what I see.
I'm a big fan of Alex DeBrincat.
Yeah.
And I loved what I saw this weekend. You know, I got scabs on my knuckles when it comes to talking about hockey fights. But I love that one with Sam Girard. Mm-hmm. That wasn't a middleweight. That was a lightweight. But those guys were swinging from the cellar. Thoughts on Alex DeBrincat?
I like Kat a lot. I like Dylan Strome, too. I think he's going to be a good player.
They were special together in Erie. I don't know how much you saw, but they were hand to glove.
Yeah, I was worried about Kat coming. Right-handed shot, taking my spot on the power play, right?
Scoring all those goals. He puts up four goals a year and doesn't make you look bad.
Like, it's got to be McDavid and Strome that is getting Kat all these points. He's not that good. But the fight you're talking about, it's about time he fought somebody in his weight class because I've seen him get fired up. There was a game last season. Hawks are struggling in Nashville. Matt Irwin takes a big run at Duncan Keith, and it's kind of quiet on the ice. Alex DeBrincat comes right from the bench.
Oh, yeah.
Drops the gloves with Matt Irwin, and he's not afraid to mix it up. And he doesn't have to be the toughest guy. He doesn't have to knock bodies around. But if he's going to show up there, throw punches like he did the other night for his teammates, that goes a long way in the locker room. And that's the fighting side of it. Yeah. How about the goal-scoring side of 40-plus goals last year? I like him a lot.
I can recall his draft year, and that was Buffalo. That was Austin Matthews' draft. And, you know, the hue and cry around the draft was, you know, DeBrincat's got first-round talent, but we don't know if he's going to be able to get that shot off in the NHL. easily as he does in junior. Is the game going to translate? It's funny because Sam Girard, who was also in that draft, those two throwing down on Saturday, there was always that wonder. Sure, he can do this in junior, but can that translate now into the NHL? Are we now at a place where once upon a time you'd say, yeah, he can do it in junior, but he can't do it in the NHL? Are we not saying that as much anymore?
Yeah.
That those skills are now transferable right from junior right into the National Hockey League?
Yeah, right away too. Maybe takes a month or two to get your feet wet. Right? When Cat first came up last year, he had a nice shot, a nice release, but it was a muffin. It was like wasn't coming off his stick very good. About November, December, all of a sudden he started shooting the puck like an NHL player, and he went off and scored a ton of goals. So it takes a little bit of time. I still feel like there's an adjustment period. Some guys figure it out at age 24, 25, but the trend is definitely going to those skills in junior, college hockey, mm-hmm. wherever you're playing. That's National Hockey League ability.
Do you wish that you had played in this era of hockey? Do you feel like your skills would have translated to more of a, I guess, less of a grindy version of hockey?
I talk about that with guys all the time, and Marian Hossa brought up a good point one time. Haas was the guy that said he misses the old days when it was clutch and grab, because then you had defensemen out there that couldn't really move.
Yeah.
And all you had to do was skate around them. It was much easier.
Mm.
You chip it in a corner behind, I mean, the first guy that pops in my mind is Sam Girard, because you mentioned him. What if you chip it into Girard's corner? He's going to go get there first and be out of the zone before you can get to it. So,
yeah,
you know, the skill level is through the roof. I didn't have skills that these guys have now to see some of the goals that are being scored and plays that are made. It's incredible. I kind of miss the old style of game where you got to survive out there first and then let your skill show through after.
I love the Marian Hossa conversation. You guys know I can talk about Marian Hossa all day long. And the old saying is you can't give a great player a bad pass. Did you ever see Marian Hossa flub a pass?
Well, he played a lot with me when I was a center. And I'm not a great passer. So, yeah, I agree with you on that. He was probably the most underrated player that we had in Chicago
during those
glory years. I heard you mention him in the open about the Selke trophy.
He should have a handful of them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. For playing with me alone for a couple of years. But as a winger, too, to have that much of an impact on the game, there was time and time again I would just throw it over to his corner in the offensive zone, or he'd bail me out on the back check or something. There was a year, 2014, I was playing on a line with Hossa and Taves, and then I think it was Keith and Yarmolson on the back end, Crawford and Nett, and I was the extra guy. It was like, I don't have to play defense anymore. Yeah. I'm just going to try to score. These guys have got it covered, but... Haas was a great teammate, and when you look at him, I always say he just looks like an NHL player. You know, great build on him, mm-hmm. dresses nice, always says the right thing, great teammate.
Do you look, now that you're in the media side and doing analysis of players, do you assess how you were as a player differently? Like, I know now that I do this, I'm like, wow, I was really soft. Like, I really would have challenged how I played. Do you look at your own game differently now?
Yeah, I don't have the blinders on anymore. Yeah. I can be honest with myself that I wasn't always in the best moods at the rink every day. I kind of lived and died with my success, with the team's success. I was very roller coaster up and down. That's probably one thing I would have liked to change. We mentioned about some of those things that were said in the heat of the battle.
Yep.
Back and forth to the team.
You know,
I don't know if I take any of those back, because that's what made me a competitive player. But I was probably did some things I regret. But, you know, I had a great time, and what a situation I walked into 2005 to 2015 with the Chicago Blackhawks.
Want to talk about Airbnb here in a second. We're going to conclude with one question. I remember having a conversation with Trevor Linden after his career was over, a couple of years after, and I said, what was the moment where you realized it's really done? And he said, when I was in the dentist chair getting my teeth fixed, mm-hmm. because there's no point when you're playing getting your teeth fixed. Like, you're just going to end up back in the dentist chair. You made it out with all your teeth. How did you do that?
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. What does that say about my career? One tooth did get...
Like a rogue puck or a high six... Patrick, like something.
Yeah. One
or
guy,
a full cage.
One guy got me in the minors.
Did you notice?
Got me right in the front tooth, and it was kind of falling out in Norfolk, Virginia. And I was going to pull it out because I wanted to look like Danny Heatley and all these guys with the one tooth. And my trainer in Philadelphia pushed it right back up into my mouth. It went black a little bit for a while, but it stayed in there. I was telling that story in the Hawks locker room, and a guy named Matt Keith came in mm-hmm. and was like, oh, yeah, who got you in Norfolk? I said, it was Marty Wilford. He goes, oh, Marty Wilford got these two teeth. And Duncan Keith walks in and says, Marty Wilford got these four teeth. He got all of us.
Now assistant with Anaheim Ducks, with the Dallas Aikens and San Diego. All
same guy.
Oshawa Generals. That Marty Wilford.
Dr. Hook.
Deepest stick on the ice. Yeah.
That's fantastic. You're here for Airbnb. Tell us what you're doing here.
Yeah, we're cruising around Toronto today, kind of getting the message out. It's Airbnb Billet Day, and there's kind of a connection there. Trust me, when they came to me and asked me about doing this, I was like, well, how am I going to get billeting with Airbnb, but essentially it's the same thing. It's opening up your home, allowing guests to come in. I know I had a unique billet experience. I moved away at 15 years old to play a year of hockey in Ottawa. Had a great billet family with the Weavers. It was a fantastic experience. Helped me get along my path to the National Hockey League. So that's what we're doing today. We're going to donate $25,000 to the GTHL here to kind of help that next legacy of hockey player in Canada. Who knows how that helps out? I know hockey's expensive these days, but every dollar amount counts.
And you don't need GTHL coaches, do we?
Maybe one or two.
Okay.
Sitting in the room.
Okay, yeah, very good.
Wait, we got to add that to your salary? Or
yeah.
That's right to the Anthony Stewart Benevolent Fund, right in the pockets there. Well, that's fantastic. Listen, Patrick, have you on time. Thanks so much for stopping by. We'd love to have you back. It's been a delight. And have fun today on behalf of Airbnb.
I will. Thanks for having me, guys. Yeah.